Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's not going to solve all of our problems, not by a long shot. It's not going to eliminate all of the tough budget decisions we still have to make, but I will say it will go a long ways towards avoiding some of the most drastic options.
That is Mayor Michael Bloomberg talking about the stimulus bill and its impact on New York City, which we will talk about with three guests to start the program today. President Obama meets with House and Senate Republican leaders to look for support for this bill today. That's an $800 billion stimulus bill, which he would rather have us call the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. But what will it invest in? Well, a close look at the numbers done by WNYC and the investigative reporting group ProPublica finds some states with the lowest unemployment would get some of the highest spending per person. So let's take a look and see how that would affect New York and New Jersey. This is the first installment of our series, Shovel Watch. If they're going to spend $1 trillion on something, we might as well keep an eye on it. And WNYC's Andrea Bernstein is good at that. So is Michael Graybell, reporter for ProPublica. Hi, Andrea, and welcome, Michael.
Good morning.
First, the big picture of the series you're launching. What is Shovel Watch?
Andrea might be better at talking about ShovelWatch, and I'll talk about ProPublica.
Well, so as you mentioned, there's almost $1 trillion, $825 billion out the door. And one of the things that was clearly a problem with this TARP money is not only was there not much federal oversight, but partly as a result and partly as of sort of, you know, who knows how to follow the money and who doesn't, the journalistic oversight has perhaps also not been as aggressive as it could have been. So we decided, okay, we're going to put our shovel in the ground, so to speak, at the outset and make a point of really watching, you know, how this money gets spent in all its fashions. So, you know, at some point we'll be looking at, you know, how the money is allocated and what projects it's going to and if these projects are worthy and if they're creating jobs and, you know, who's getting the contracts. But right now we have just sort of started to look at, you know, what are the choices that are being made, and this thing is moving so quickly. I mean, they're talking about passing this thing tomorrow, which is, you know, scarcely a week after we have a new president.
Passing it tomorrow? I thought the deadline was President's Day.
Well, passing it in the House, which is the first step. Then it would go to the Senate. Then there would be a negotiation, and then they would have a final bill. But still, it's sort of, you know, moving it at lightning speed, and it's giant. And, you know, one of the things that I think that we pretty much clearly know is that when you spend lots of money fast, you may not be making the best choices you can make.
By the way, sometimes these things are measured in pages. Do you know how many pages the bill is?
647, I believe.
Really? I'm surprised it's that small. The TARP was 300 and something when it was all said and done. It started at about a paragraph and wound up 300 something. I'm surprised this isn't like 6,000. But Michael, the first question you asked, looking at the headline on the ProPublica release, is will dollars follow need?
Right. And I mean, we've heard these terms shovel ready and that this is, you know, a job creation package. So President Obama has sort of created this image in the public's mind of workers heading out to America's heartland with pickaxes over their shoulder and shovels over their shoulder to build these grand public works projects. So we decided to crunch the numbers a bit. And when you look at specifically the transportation and infrastructure spending, which does make up a big chunk of the jobs, you see disparities with states that have some of the lowest unemployment in the country. For example, Wyoming gets the third highest amount of infrastructure dollars per capita. Michigan, which right now tops the country in unemployment at 9.6%, is near the bottom, about $124 per capita versus Wyoming, which gets $451 per capita.
And why is it like that?
Well, in crafting the bill, the House kind of relied on these existing funding formulas. It was a way to avoid this kind of political tug of war that would go on if they were to open that debate up again. But the formulas take into account things like federal highway miles your state has or how many miles residents drive rather than economic ones like unemployment and poverty.
It also doesn't necessarily take into effect what's the best policy. For example, New Jersey and New York are sort of around the median levels nationally for unemployment, although New York, as we know, is rapidly perhaps tipping the balance. But these figures were as of November, when the end of November, when the last figures were available. But if you look at a state like New Jersey, which gets rewarded for the number of highway roads, highway miles it has, and the number of vehicle miles traveled by the federal formula, so New Jersey is getting a lot of highway money. But meanwhile, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey has pointed out that they want to build this train across the Hudson River to allow more people to come in from New Jersey Transit. And the Port Authority says, you know, we have all the approvals. We could start tomorrow building this tunnel in New Jersey. But that, because of the way existing formulas are structured, and that's how this bill is done, is not getting funded. Or at least it may get some funding, but, you know, it won't be a fully funded project that can be built immediately, which would ostensibly follow one of President Obama's stated goals, which is to create a greener infrastructure. Clearly, you want to get people out of ways of getting around that use a lot of carbon and into other ways like trains that don't.
And I want to come back in a few minutes to the list of things that will be spent on in New York, which looks to me on first glance like a list of a lot of existing social programs plus police and some tax cuts and not a lot of what I would call infrastructure. And we'll ask Congressman Wiener about that after you, because this is a list that he released. But on the question of whether the spending will follow need, Michael Grable from ProPublica, there are various different formulas that you found for how stimulus money would be distributed. You talked about the disparity if you measure it just by unemployment rates, but also states with high unemployment and high poverty rates get more stimulus money per person than states with just high unemployment. So how is that calculated, and is that a new measure for this bill?
There are several state-by-state breakdowns that have sort of come out using existing formulas. So transportation infrastructure is one of them. It's a large chunk. But there have also been some breakdowns of some of these more funding for low-income people, like food stamps, et cetera. And those tend to sort of even it out because the formulas already take into account low-income people.
And all right, let's go down some of this spending. Andrea, more cops on city streets. I'm looking at Congressman Wiener, who's going to be our next guest, his list. More cops on city streets, aid for states for school modernization, public safety, health care relief for the state and the city, aid to public housing, plus the tax cuts. I mean, those things, as I said, tend to sound like social program spending, plus police spending, public safety spending, and the tax cuts. Where's the infrastructure for New York City?
Well, exactly. And one could ask this about the whole bill. I mean, if you go to WNYC.org, you can get a link to the ProPublica maps, and their map of where the money is being spent is pretty startling. There's a giant pink area on the left, which represents tax cuts. And then the next biggest areas are things like Medicaid, housing, food stamps, unemployment benefits. And then over on the right, in a box that doesn't even go the full length of this chart, is transportation and infrastructure. So it's actually a very small portion of this bill. Now, this is not to say that all of this other spending is necessarily bad. For example, there is fiscal relief to states, and there is an economic theory that when state governments rapidly contract, they have a negative multiplier effect, so that if they rapidly contract, more jobs are lost in the private sector economy than could be gained through other kinds of spending. So there is a reason to not just let state governments collapse. And clearly, the biggest portion of almost every large state budget at this point is health care, is Medicaid, and then education. So that is the theory behind not letting those areas just fall apart. And then there is, you know, this bill is a mix of Obama campaign promises, for example, tax cuts for individuals, this energy grid. And one of the things that was so interesting as I was reporting this story is that you know, I've been asking people who in the White House has been responsible, who from the Obama team has been responsible for shaping this bill, and I've sort of gotten these vague answers. But in the last few days, it's really come out in, that Larry Summers, who's the director of the White House National Economic Council, has really put his stamp on it, and that he has some reservations, so I've been told, about how fast the transit money could be spent. For example, he thinks it could be spent faster on roads. So roads are getting sort of favored over transit. And
wow.
In fact, there was an initial Congressman James Oberstar of Minnesota, head of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, had put out a proposal for $30 billion for highways and $17 billion for mass transit. Now, in a bill that's $825 billion, even $17 billion doesn't seem like a huge amount of money. But what happened between that proposal and the bill as introduced was that the transit money got slashed to $10 billion. So that's a 40% cut. And
because Larry Summers didn't think it could be spent quickly enough?
Well, that is what Congressman Oberstar has been telling a lot of people, that he's been going to bat, but that Larry Summers felt that the money couldn't get out there quickly enough, and that it couldn't be spent. Now, why could it be spent on a smart grid, which nobody is clear what it is, more quickly? So you do see this sort of hodgepodge of promises, concerns, things you want to get through the Republicans, strange funding formulas. And this bill is sort of trying to do, in some ways, a sort of whole Obama campaign in one fell swoop.
So there's the lead for New York, I think. Not as much mass transit money as we may have expected to see
a whole lot less.
This stimulus bill. So Lee Sander, the head of the MTA, is scheduled to come on the show later in the week. You think he would express disappointment?
Nobody's publicly expressing disappointment. Everybody is publicly saying we're so grateful.
All money is good money.
Right. All money is good money. But privately, you know, mass transit advocates and transit officials and people that care about sustainable transit, you know, had great hopes when Obama started talking about this right after the campaign, that this would be an opportunity to, as they see it, right the course. And there is a great deal of dismay. Now, still, New York is probably going to get about $3 billion for transportation money, including transit. Some portion of that will go to MTA, and some portion of that, roughly in the hundreds of millions of dollars, will go to New York City, and New York City would be able to control that. And they will say, you know, that's wonderful, that's great. When you think about the price tags on some of these big mass transit projects, it doesn't go a long way. That doesn't even get into the issue of cuts. And all kinds of transit systems across the country are contracting now, even while ridership is growing, because they can't afford to keep going with their economies contracting.
So, Michael Grable, what do you look at next at ProPublica if your first question was, will the money follow need?
The next question, I guess, is this bill really earmark-free and pork-free, as the Obama campaign has the White House and the Democrats have promised? So that's something we're going to be looking at. Ultimately, when this bill does get passed, we are going to be following the money and looking at where the money gets spent. Does it get spent on the best projects? And who is really pulling the strings?
Well, as I said before, if we're going to spend $1 trillion, I guess news organizations might as well spend a few pennies to see where it's going and who's getting their hooks into it, right? Michael Grable from ProPublica, WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now, as promised, Congressman Anthony Weiner, Democrat from Brooklyn and Queens, who also happens to poll pretty darn close to Mayor Bloomberg in a new New York One poll on mayoral candidates or potential ones. We will talk about the stimulus and New York, Senator Gillibrand and guns and immigration, and the mayoral race. Congressman Weiner, welcome back to WNYC. Always nice to have you.
Good morning. It's my pleasure.
You released a study of what the stimulus bill would mean for New York. I was running down some of the highlights with Andrea. I think you were on hold and listening to that report. Is this a lot of social spending and not much infrastructure for the city?
Well, there's not as much infrastructure as I and some others might like. But remember, a lot of what we're trying to achieve here is to help the state of New York and the city of New York not have to contract. And I think Andrea referred to this. You know, when we do a couple of billion dollars, that's billion with a B, to help out with Medicaid expenditures, that frees up the city to, A, not have to make cuts in services, and also frees up their ability to spend on other things. So to some degree, money is fungible. You know, we're caught in this almost philosophical conflict between wanting things to be spent quickly and wanting, in the case of transportation and infrastructure, to build the smart things. You know, it's very difficult to build a bridge in two or three quarters of spending. It's very difficult to invest in a lot of the things that we need in the subway system very quickly. And so I would have liked to see more infrastructure spending. But remember, money's fungible, and the important thing here is that the state, the MTA, the city are going to be getting a lot of help in doing the things they do every day, and I think that's going to give them the ability to do more for infrastructure as well.
But when President Obama talked about shovel-ready programs, people around the city, people around the country probably weren't thinking of Medicaid, aid to public schools, keeping cops on the street, even though those things are vitally important.
Well, I think that's right, and I think to some degree this is a vehicle that's trying to achieve a bunch of things. We're trying to create jobs. We're trying to make smart investments. We're trying to offset the counter-cyclical effects that would have. You know, if we do a stimulus bill of, let's say, $10 billion, and then the states all cut $20 billion from their various budgets, it's not going to have the stimulative effect that we want. And I'll tell you another secret of this debate, if you promise not to tell anyone.
I won't tell anyone.
The idea of shovel ready is a little bit apocryphal. I mean, even the most ready project probably needs an environmental review. The most ready project still needs it to go through contracting. So I think we are going to have to revisit the idea of what our big infrastructure needs are. And I've got legislation with Congressman Israel that would create an infrastructure commission to try to not do things in narrow cast pork kind of spending, but larger thoughts about kind of the regional things that our states need. But I would agree with the criticism that there's not as much stimulus as not as much infrastructure as I would have liked.
And what about mass transit infrastructure in particular? Again, I think you heard Andrea say that Larry Summers, the economic advisor to the president, apparently decided that highway spending could create jobs faster than mass transit spending, and so mass transit spending got slashed from an original proposal of $17 billion, which, as she pointed out, is already not very much in an $800 billion bill, from $17 down to $10 billion, largely because of Larry Summers' perceptions here. Is that your understanding?
It is in a general sense that I think that as this bill has gone on, the amount of infrastructure in it has shrunk some. But let's not lose sight of the fact that the roads and highways and transit money all as a group, that's almost $3.5 billion coming to New York State. And about 160 of it or so is going to make its way down to New York City. That's not bad. You know, when you figure, it's actually, my mind can be a little more than that. About $200 million is going to wind up in New York City's metropolitan area. There's no doubt about it that I would have liked to see much more stimulus money going to infrastructure. The problem that we had with infrastructure, just as a rhetorical matter, is, as I said, these things don't lend themselves to very quick fixes, but they are very job intensive. And there has been a lot of discussion. I think you're going to see some folks voting no on the bill because it's too big, but you're also going to see some folks voting no because they think it's not ambitious enough on the transportation side.
Those would be Democrats?
I think so.
Would you be one of those Democrats?
No, I think overall New York City and New York State does so well in this bill, and we cast such a wide net and deal with so many challenges. There's, you know, New York City is going to be getting close to $2 billion in K-12 education funding. There's going to be money in here that's enough to hire 600 to 700 new police officers for New York City. Just the Medicaid offsets is going to be in the magnitude of billions of dollars coming to New York City. So when all the equities are put together, and also when you consider the fact that the Obama administration has been here a grand total of a couple of weeks here, I think it's very important that we work with the Obama administration to keep a critical eye on things, but try to get this bill passed. It won't be the end of what we do, but I think it's an important start.
One other thing on transportation. I have a quote here from Congressman Jim Oberstar, Democrat from Minnesota, who's the chairman of the House Transportation committee on why transportation dollars were sacrificed, and he says it's in favor of tax cuts in the stimulus package, which make up roughly a third. He said the tax cut initiative that had to be paid for in some way by keeping the entire package in the range of $850 billion. We took money out of Amtrak and out of aviation. We took money out of the Corps of Engineers, reduced the water infrastructure program, the drinking water and the wastewater treatment facilities and sewer lines, reduced that from $14 billion to roughly $9 billion. So that also reflects some of the compromises that the president and, I guess, the leadership of the Democrats in Congress are making to try to get Republican votes by giving more tax cuts.
Well, I think that's the political framing of it, but there's a substantive rationale as well. And as I've said now a couple of times here, I do believe there should have been more for infrastructure. All that being said, part of what the objectives of the bill is to stimulate the economy in a general sense, to get more money on our neighborhood shopping strips, you know, King's Highway and Queens Boulevard, get people dealing with some of the debt that they've accumulated to help them pay it down a little bit. So when you have a tax cut plan that for workers who make under $200,000 a year will get $1,000 back over the course of several months to help them spend a little bit. I think that was an important imperative here. We do want to stimulate the economy. We do want to create jobs. We do want to take the burden off of states. There's no doubt about it. This is a basket where we're trying to achieve a lot of things, and when you have an $850 billion bill, you'd hope you'd be able to do a bunch
of them. Well, then on the question of jobs, the goal is to create 3 million new jobs. That's in addition to jobs saved. If we look at the bill as primarily for New York to keep something close to the present level of services in place, teachers, people in healthcare, police officers, that doesn't sound like it's a lot of new hiring. It sounds like it would be a lot of job retention or saving jobs that might otherwise go away. But how do you get to 3 million jobs in this, or New York's share of 3 million jobs?
Well, you know, let's take a look at what's in there for New York City. I mean, New York's economy, as it's retrenched on the financial side, continues to be a leader in healthcare, for example. I can tell you that New York City getting nearly $2 billion of additional Medicaid funds retains jobs, but also allows hospitals and healthcare facilities to grow. It allows them to keep up with a growing population and growing healthcare demands. You know, it's not just government jobs that when you're doing another $500 million to New York City, for example, for aid to public housing. You know, those are private boiler operators, private elevator repairmen, private painters who are going to be employed to help bring our public housing back up to speed. So, you know, I believe that these numbers for the jobs are largely shots in the dark. You know, the administration put out a list that seemed pretty precise yesterday on where these things are going to be. I think that it's pretty much a shot in the dark. What we're basically hoping to do is to provide enough activity in places that we need it that they turn out to be investments in the long term, that we're making smart investments with our money, unlike the war in Iraq, for example, and also putting some people to work on longer term things, infrastructure, and some shorter term things like in healthcare and public housing.
And so just one more thing on infrastructure, and I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm harping on it, but the basis of spending $1 trillion to stimulate the economy was supposed to be, as I understood it from the president, that we wouldn't just be spending to keep current levels of month-to-month, year-to-year service in place, but that if we were going to spend this much money, go into this much more debt for the nation, for our children and our children's children, then we were going to come up with something that was going to build the infrastructure for the next generation. And whether that was green infrastructure, whether that was the Second Avenue subway, you know, whether it was medical records online or broadband everywhere, it was infrastructure that would be there to be used, not just, again, keeping spending to keep current services more or less in place. Do you think that's a wrong-headed priority?
No, I just think that you're looking at the job creation too narrowly. If we create let's just say hypothetically a light rail system that goes to upstate New York. It's not just the jobs that are created building that light rail. It's the jobs that we're able to develop along that corridor. It's the economic activity and the housing activity that you might create along that corridor. It's our ability to employ more people in the city because we relieve traffic. We have to look at investments not just in the bricks and mortar of those investments, but what they provide. There's money in here to wire parts of the country. and parts of New York that are underserved by the internet. Well, by doing that, yes, you create the jobs of doing that build-out, but you also theoretically create the opportunities for many more jobs in the tech sector in communities that don't benefit from them. So it is, as I said, it's an imperfect idea. A lot of this, you know, you can argue that everything creates some, like even expansion of food stamps means that working mothers are able to continue working. You know, we've got funding in the bill to do worker training that maybe directly doesn't. The money doesn't, but hopefully, you know, it creates economic activity going forward.
All right. Congressman Anthony Weiner with me on WNYC. We're already over our time, but I have to ask you about Senator Gillibrand. You called in as a caller on Friday morning, just before she was formally introduced by Governor Patterson. You defended her when other Democrats were coming out as critical. Were you then a little shocked on Friday afternoon? Does that mean you have to go vote?
That just means your time's up. We have a buzzer here that goes off when my interviews go too long. No, I'm just kidding. That actually just means the House is coming in session.
Okay, so just real quick. Were you a little shocked on Friday afternoon to see the introductory news conference with many big Democrats missing, but Alphonse D'Amato standing at her side?
Yes. I thought it was ridiculous having Senator D'Amato there, irrespective of her connection to Senator Gillibrand. I think that his presence there wasn't particularly on message. But you know, a lot of it is we've gotten caught up a good deal in the atmospherics of this and in the drama leading up to it. But let's remember what's important. He made an excellent selection, and Senator Gillibrand, as people get to know her, they're going to realize that she's a hard worker. She understands upstate. She knows downstate very well. She's learned how to win in some very difficult Republican communities. She is smart as a whip. Now, there are some issues that she and I don't agree on, and I think, you know, she's made commitments to me and others that she's going to take a good hard look at those now that she's not representing a rural district upstate, that she's representing the entire state. I think she's going to be terrific, but I do think some of the selection process and the rollout was not very good politically. Theater.
She opposes any path to citizenship for illegal immigrants. At least she has. Do you think that's going to change?
Yes.
She.
It's certainly going to change if she wants to get reelected, and if she wants to continue to have my support.
And what's your ranking with the NRA? Hers is 100%.
I've gotten an F now for 10 straight years. I don't think I'm ever going to graduate whatever their equivalent of school is. But, let's realize something. You know, and I had this very similar experience when I was traveling the country for Senator Clinton and then later on for Senator, now President Obama. You know, whenever you take on a larger jurisdiction, you've got to learn and understand the issues, and you become a different type of elected official. I'm quite sure that when I worked for Congressman Schumer in the 80s, I didn't hear him talking about the importance of the dairy industry upstate, but he is now one of the most fervent fighters for agriculture in all throughout New York. I think we have to have reasonable expectations. What we should want is someone who's smart, someone who understands the values of New York, someone who's willing to earn this seat. She got essentially a gift for 2 years, but she's going to have to earn her next 4 years, and I think she understands that.
And I said 100% rating. I think, as you indicated, they do letter grades, and that she got an A. So last thing, there's a New York One poll out yesterday as they launched their Road to City Hall political series for the year that finds you're only 7 points behind Mayor Bloomberg. Are you running?
Well, I'm running. I'm not, you know, there's no, I agree with Mayor Bloomberg that it's much too soon to start a campaign. You know, this may sound ironic or interesting. You know, I'm working every single day on things that make the mayor's life easier and make him successful. You know, when I work in the Energy and Commerce Committee to change the Medicaid formula to bring billions of dollars to close New York City's budget gap, that's good for New York. But that's what I think what citizens want us to do now is to do some problem solving. I don't think they're eager to start the campaign too quickly, and neither am I.
What would your letter grade be for Mayor Bloomberg on his handling of the recession?
Well, I gave a speech recently at the Citizens Union where I raised some real red flags about the way that we have increased revenues, meaning taxes coming into New York, by New York City residents, and we have not spent them in the wisest of ways. I'm not going to be silent. There's going to be an opportunity for us to have a full-throated debate about whether this financial crisis was contributed to by the mayor's policies. But that's for later on. Now I really am working every single day on things like the infrastructure bill to help President Obama be successful. I want the city to succeed, and I think that ultimately the citizens in New York want that too.
And we'll have plenty of time for more of that kind of conversation later in the year. Thank you very much for coming on and talking about Senator Gillibrand and the stimulus bill. Congressman Wiener, he is the Democratic regional whip trying to get the votes into place from our area for the stimulus. And always appreciate you coming on, Congressman.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we'll look a little deeper into the Gillibrand and gun questions in a minute. She says she'll work to find common ground. Does it exist?